Case number 214045, United States of America versus Eric Bartoli. Argument not to exceed 15 minutes per side. Mr. Jagger, you may appear for the appellant.
Morning.
Good afternoon. My name is Stephen R. Jagger, and I represent Eric Bartoli. I do ask for 3 minutes for rebuttal. May it please the court, the government has conceded that Mr. Bartoli continues to serve an improper sentence in excess of the statutory maximum penalties. That concession, however, does not resolve other issues that are critical to the fair and impartial administration of justice. This is a case where from inception in 2003 to resentencing in 2021 is characterized by multiple misstatements by the government as to what the maximum penalties faced by Mr. Bartoli were from the outset. This is a case about a plea agreement that was entered into by the parties that recited the wrong statutory maximums. This is a case where Mr. Bartoli did not receive his Sixth Amendment rights to effective assistance of counsel because none of those misstatements were ever noticed by or corrected by defense counsel.
It's also a case where the government has conceded the ex post facto issue.
That's correct. It happened the second time. And that's the one they conceded it the first time, they conceded it the second time, and the district court says this is a mutual misunderstanding. This is inadvertence. This is a mistake.
Shouldn't we accept the government at its word and send it back to the district court with using the correct statutory terms?
I don't think that gives complete remedy to Mr. Bartoli.
What part does he need?
Well, he raised the ineffective assistance of counsel before the district court in the 2255 proceeding. The district court denied that relief, said the issue was moot because the sentence had been set aside. If you go back to the beginning of this case, everything is based on not only the incorrect statutory maximums. The incorrect statutory maximums are argued, are presented to the court without correction throughout the case.
So he would need for a court, maybe this court, to issue a certificate of appealability. Is that correct?
I don't think a certificate of appealability is necessary in this case.
All right. Okay. Why not?
Well, first of all, it's a direct appeal on a resentencing that's incorrect. Secondly,
assistance is well before that. It's not.
It's before that, and it's continues on the direct appeal in 2016. It was never raised. An appellate counsel at that time acknowledged the constitutional ineffectiveness on their part because that was the best issue they had. He was sentenced to the wrong amount of maximums, and they never raised it. And finally, Mr. Bartoli tried to appeal this early on in
What more do you want us to do? You want us to say this was ineffective assistance? He should just start over.
He's been in prison. He's been in prison since 2013. At the time and I don't think there's a sentencing package in this case either, which I'll get to, because the court unbundles it, rearranges the sentences, uses the wrong maximums to reach the same 240 months. Is what the court
I'm going to grant you there's a problem. I think the government's
correct. And I think what happens is that when they rebundle the sentence, he uses 5-year sentences that are already served. They're already served before the resentencing takes place. So if you look at the sentencing package theory, there's nothing left to unbundle.
But isn't this equivalent to like an original sentencing? I mean, do we just take those off the table because they've been served, even though this was all part of one criminal scheme and the judge?
I think they're off the table because they no longer exist when he's resentenced. You can't add something to something else that no longer exists. He had served those 5 years.
You're going to argue time served, that he gets credit for all that.
I am going to argue that, and if he is, he's out. if he's sentenced correctly.
Well, by correctly, I mean, my view, we remand this, arguably remand it to Judge Adams, who then I would say can start anew because these things all seem to be connected to one another, which he's shown twice because he's twice sentenced in different ways, always to get to the same result.
And they're all incorrect.
Yes. I know. So what we should send it back and say he can't be sentenced on the time he's already served, and for the other offenses he can be sentenced
with credit for time served.
Well, you can't double count it.
Well, he gets.
Unless he, I mean, I guess the district. Well, what the district judge did all concurrent. You're right, I suppose. But
yeah, but the, they were all concurrent the first time. The second time, he ran an illegal 10-year sentence consecutive, which is direct, and then said it wasn't. Mr. Bartoli couldn't show prejudice with the ineffective assistance counsel claim. Therefore, the issue was moot. I don't understand that logic. That's what he says. And the point of it is that Judge Adams has had two opportunities to do this, two opportunities to do it correctly, and didn't do it. I think it caused him to question the integrity of the system to send it back to the same judge to do it again. Because he's already said over and over and over again, the proper sentence is 240 months.
I mean, unfortunately, he wasn't alone in the error. Your client's counsel was, unfortunately, in on the error, and so was the government's counsel.
I
blame it all on Judge Adams. There were other folks here who missed this issue.
They missed the issue, but the buck stops with the bench. He's the one imposing the sentence, they're not. I think he's had adequate opportunity to address that. He should have got it right the first time, should have recognized it the second time, and didn't, either time. Although, in 2003, he knew what the correct sentence was. Before the sentencing in 2016, he states what the correct maximum.
Let me ask you one more time what you want us to, what we should remand it back.
If there's going to be, I think he's served his time. If the proper sentences would have been imposed in the first place, and he should be released, the case should be dismissed for the constitutional ineffectiveness of his counsel.
Do we have authority to do that? Or what? We're you want us to impose a different sentence?
You don't have the authority to impose a different sentence. You have the authority to say he didn't get his effective assistance of counsel. And sometimes, you know, the guilty guy's got to go free to protect the system, right?
That's in the movies, but I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's true overall.
I mean,
in theory, anyway.
He's definitely been wronged, and I would be inclined to have him resentenced. And if
that's the inclination of the court, we're asking that it not be remanded back to Judge Adams. He's clearly expressed strong views. He's clearly determined he's going to give this guy 240 months. If the 5-year sentence has already been served, they shouldn't be available to repackage in a consecutive nature to get back to the same 240 months again.
Is the ineffective assistance claim that the attorney just gave ineffective counsel as to the statutory maximums? Or is it also that had Mr. Bartoli gotten better counsel, he would have proceeded differently?
I'm not saying that he's entitled to better counsel. I think he's entitled to constitutionally effective counsel, which includes knowing what the possible penalties are that your client faces. And then when they're done incorrectly and restated multiple times by the government in different amounts, it's not the same inconsistency. That's the other problem with this case.
He took a plea deal here?
He did.
So you're not arguing that he would have gone to trial had he received more effective assistance of counsel?
He filed a motion to withdraw his plea in 2019 or 20.
Right.
And the judge said that was too late to do that. Too much time had passed and denies it. But he did it as soon as he knew what had happened to him.
I'm trying to figure out if the ineffective assistance of counsel claim goes to that issue. That if he had received counsel constitutionally, he would have gone to trial as opposed to entering into a plea agreement.
He would never have entered into the plea agreement. And he says that. The judge is wrong and the government's wrong when they say he never addresses that or asks for that. He does.
Aren't those things needed in some other sort of collateral proceeding? Do we have enough in the record to?
Yes, it's all in the record.
This is all clear that he would have?
He files an uncontroverted statement
okay.
that I would I would not have proceeded with this plea agreement had I known. I recite that in the brief.
Okay. Why is that just so the, you know, the lawyer tells him you might get 20 years.
Right.
He pleads guilty.
Right.
In fact, he maybe only would get 5 years.
Right.
So then he goes to trial.
Because the risk is much less. He's already been, what's factually interesting, this case starts in 2000.
Are you saying the risk is less today because he's already served the time?
No, I think the risk was less. I mean, then.
It was less back then, but if you look at it today, I suppose you say he's already served the time, so why not go to trial? Maybe he gets acquitted.
I don't know. I don't know the answer to that, but I think that the case starts in 2003. He's arrested in 2013. He's been in custody since 2013, which is 10 years, which would have been the statutory maximum. Here, the case is all run concurrently.
The first 10 years, he was in Peru, right?
From 2003 to 2015, yeah.
I'm not going to count that in his favor in terms of a really long period of time.
2003 to 2013, he's in Peru.
Yeah.
2013, he's arrested. He's returned to the United States in 2015. He's in custody from 2013 on. The Judge Adams gave him credit for time served the first time. Second time, he doesn't exactly do that. He runs it all concurrent the first time. The second time, he runs a 10-year improper 10-year maximum consecutive to get to the same 240 months.
So I know that Judge Radler has asked you this. I just want to make sure I'm clear on exactly what you're seeking in terms of relief. You want us to grant relief that would say this was a quote unquote illegal sentence, and I think the government agrees. And then we would remand it to the district court, and order that he has served his time and should be released.
That's one option that you have.
I'm just wondering what authority there. I'm not aware.
The other option is a remand that says those sentences have been served except for the two 10-year sentences, which were improper, which he had 5-year statutory maximums, remand it back for resentencing on those two counts only, which would be 5 plus 5, even if he runs those consecutive to each other, is still the same 10-year deal that would have been handed down on concurrent sentences from the beginning.
Okay. Which will still amount to 240 months at the end of the day.
Not necessarily, because there's no 20-year statutory maximum here. I don't think it's proper for the judge to stack 5 plus 5 plus 5 plus 5 on sentences already served.
Well, but if he's already served 10, and
right,
there are two for which 5 years is available on each count, and he gets each of those 5 years, that'll be an additional 10 years. That's all I was saying. Is that right?
If he runs them consecutive, but I think they should be concurrent, as they always were, then they're already served. He'd been in custody since 2013.
Well, you're not suggesting that we have any authority to tell the district judge whether it's consecutive or concurrent, are you?
I think you have the authority to send it back for resentencing on those two counts only, which would be 5 on each of statutory maximums, 5 and 5. He can run those two consecutive with each other if he wants to. That's 10 years. That would already be served. And to be honest with you, I think that because the plea agreement is improper from the outset.
I think more questions or
no more.
Okay, we'll give you a rebuttal too.
Okay,
that's a lot to chew on. So, let the government.
May it please the court, Dan Ranke on behalf of the government. Mr. Bartoli's argument ignores really the sentencing package doctrine. When Judge Adams imposed a 240-month sentence, which this court found on the first appeal was a procedurally and substantively reasonable sentence, he did it when he was looking at all 8 counts. There were actually 10 counts to start. When he entered into his plea agreement, 2 money laundering counts were dismissed. The judge then looked at the conspiracy counts, the securities fraud, the sale of unregistered securities, the mail fraud, the wire fraud, and the tax evasion counts, all as a package. I think the argument might have more traction if all Mr. Bartoli was convicted of was mail or wire fraud, but he wasn't. He was convicted of 6 other counts, and that the judge looked at the facts of the nature and circumstances of those offenses, the harm to the victims, the amount of money, which was I think, close to $64 million that was involved when he determined that a 240-month sentence was appropriate. I don't think this court can look at it only in the sense of it only involves these two mail and wire fraud. I have to say right off the bat, and the court obviously knows, you know, the government led Judge Adams down the wrong path here, to say the very least.
Twice.
The first time, I think, was a little bit more understandable, just given the Sarbanes-Oxley, you know, the offense conduct occurred between 95 and 99. Mr. Bartoli fled the country in 2000 when the SEC started to investigate him and enjoined him from trading any more stocks. The Sarbanes-Oxley was passed, changing the statutory maximums from 5 years for the mail and wire fraud and the securities fraud to 20. And then he was indicted in 2003. When he was brought back to the country in 2015, that law had been in effect for, now 12 years. That doesn't excuse it, and that doesn't make it correct. It's still wrong, but I think it was a little bit more understandable the first time. The second time, it's hard to explain what happened. We acknowledged in our sentencing memorandum that two pages are contradictory. Page 8 says the statutory maximums are 5 years for mail and wire fraud and 10 for securities fraud. And then we have a chart on the very next page saying it's 10 years. We inverted the numbers.
Your friend on the other side suggests that we uphold the sentence as the two of the 5 year sentences, and then reverse the sentence and require the district court to not enter any further sentence in light of the errors. I'm not sure I'm quite describing it right, but are you aware of any authority for that sort of thing? Is this all about the packaging, basically?
No, Your Honor, that goes back to the sentencing package doctrine. I don't think we can parse out those two counts and can pretend like the other six counts weren't part of Judge Adams' sentence. They were.
Could we get to 10 years? Assuming we could break them all out, could we even get to 10 years from the way it's been sentenced?
I don't think so. I mean, Judge Adams could theoretically go up to 45 years if he decided to run everything consecutive. The fact that he went, because there's a 5-year statutory maximum on count one, 10 years on count two, 5 years on count three, four, five, six and seven were dismissed, and then 5 years on eight, nine, and 10. So if the judge actually didn't go as high as he could have gone, when he imposed the 240-month sentence.
Is it clear, I guess, that these sentences are sort of interrelated or interdependent such that we should send this back as a total package?
For I believe so, Your Honor.
Or just send it back, one piece of it?
I believe so, Your Honor, under the sentencing package doctrine. He was sentenced under for all these counts, not just the wire and mail.
Well, all the counts have to be related, right, in some way?
Yes, and they all are related. They're all part of his financial investment fraud scheme, and then not filing taxes to hide the proceeds of that scheme.
So in the government's view, what should any remand look like?
It should be remanded to Judge Adams for resentencing with the correct statutory maximums on all 8 counts. And that we would ensure that Judge Adams was aware that those were the correct statutory maximums, and that then the judge could decide if he still felt the 240-month sentence was appropriate. On the resentencing, the judge actually took away acceptance of responsibility when, based on Mr. Bartoli's filing of a pro se motion to withdraw his plea. But the judge still didn't, even with that, which took 3 levels off, it reduced him from a level 32, or level, bumped him back up to a level 32, it would have been 29. Judge didn't increase the 240-month sentence. The judge, again, just went back to the factors of the facts of the case, He also noted that Mr. Bartoli seemed even more unrepentant this time than he had the first time, and the harm to the victims, the amount of money that were involved, and Mr. Bartoli's flight to Peru. So those were all the factors that the court relied on. The court didn't show any particular animosity or unfair bias. I don't think that the extraordinary remedy of reassignment to a different district court judge is appropriate here. Again, the judge, the main thing there, that would be a duplication of resources. Judge Adams is familiar with the victims. Many of these victims were elderly and have since passed away. At the resentencing, they actually had family members of victims who had died to come in and explain some of the harm that had been caused. Judge Adams already is familiar with that. Another judge actually couldn't be as familiar with that as Judge Adams. And again, he hasn't expressed or didn't show, the record doesn't show, I believe, the type of bias necessary for warning reassignment.
So Mr. Bartoli has some other claims, right?
Yes.
Including ineffective assistance of counsel. Your friend on the other side suggests that we have sufficient record before us to decide those matters. Are those matters that we can or should decide all at one time here?
Well, I think that goes back to, I think Your Honor is referring almost to the COA issue well.
Yeah.
Government relies almost entirely on Burton, which was a 2020 unreported case out of this court, which found that as to anything that happened at the resentencing, obviously Mr. Bartoli does not need a certificate of appealability for. It found, though, that other issues, ancillary issues, in Burton it was Rule 43 issues, I think, about his presence when they announced the guilty verdict. And the court said for that issue, he would need a COA. It's the government's position that for these ineffective assistance of counsel claims, Mr. Bartoli would need a COA for this court to consider them. Now, Burton, that being said, Burton also granted sua sponte, a certificate of appealability, to dismiss those, to consider those claims. So I'm sure that this court, if it felt it was appropriate, could do the same thing. But then if it proceeded in that way, I think then we'd start to look at whether, and his main claim seems to be the plea agreement. The counsel was ineffective as to the plea agreement, as to the statutory maximums, they would have entered into a plea agreement. So he also makes some other claims about the indictment, a designation sheet, some claims about his extradition. But I think the main thrust of his ineffective assistance of counsel claim goes to the plea agreement. The designation sheet had the wrong statutory maximum, but that's a cover sheet. It doesn't go to the grand jury. It couldn't really have any effect on whether he was indicted. The indictment doesn't list the statutory maximum, so I don't think that was an issue. The plea agreement, basically all we have here is Mr. Bartoli saying, I wouldn't have entered into the plea agreement if I knew. It's the government's position that he needs more than that. In Lee, First United States, Supreme Court case, and it was dealing with a deportation issue. The defendant was never told that he could be deported if he pled guilty, and the court found that post hoc assertions, kind of like the assertions Mr. Bartoli is making here, aren't enough. You must look to contemporaneous evidence at the time as to whether he would have not entered into the plea. And when you look at the record, you know, Mr. Bartoli admitted his guilt. He actually received a benefit. Two charges were dismissed. He only moved to withdraw his plea well into after the 2255 was filed, after counsel was appointed, after a supplement to the 2255 was filed. So he didn't do it in a timely fashion at all. And the court didn't deny it based on it was untimely. The court denied it because it found there was no, other than Mr. Bartoli's assertion, there was no evidence that he would not have entered the plea. And it relied on United States v. Kennedy, which is a similar case where there was a incorrect understanding about statutory maximums. That one, they thought the statutory maximum was 15 years. It was actually 5 years. And this court found in Kennedy that Mr. Kennedy's assertion that he would have entered into the plea without more wasn't enough for ineffective, to show that he would have entered into the plea to support his ineffective assistance of counsel claim. I think I've covered everything I need to cover. If there's no further questions, I would ask that this court remand this case for de novo resentencing with Judge Adams and reject the remaining claims.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
I'll talk fast.
So much to say. On the certificate of appealability issue, I do want to point out two things. Certificate of Burton was my case, the Rule 43 case. Certificate of appealability is not jurisdictional, number one. This court has the authority to grant that. If you look at the history of this case, I'd ask the court to, and I recite these, I think, in my briefs, 20-3244, an order from this court, May 15th of 2020, at ECF 12-2, and 21-3100 of that case. Mr. Bertoli, this court says, for this appeal to proceed, the district court or this court must issue a certificate of appealability stating at least one issue for review. If the district court has denied the COA as to some or all other issues, which is what this court does, this court, referring to the Sixth Circuit, will review all issues rejected by the district court. You do not need to take any further action for this review to occur. And so he's relying on that when he doesn't ask for the certificate of appeal, but we're asking one from the bench here today. Secondly, the district court not only got this thing wrong twice, it got it wrong multiple times during each of the sections of this case takes place in, those time frames, okay?
This is your reassignment argument? Reassign a case.
It's the reassignment argument, and it's also in rebuttal to, this is more than about the plea agreement for the ineffectiveness of his counsel, and that's why the dismissal was appropriate. It's over and over and over and over again. The government does take the court down the wrong path. The government doesn't know, or the court, quite honestly, doesn't look at the case. Sometimes he says the right sentence is available, and sometimes the court says not. And the district, or the counsel for the government, over and over and over again, recites multiple versions of what the maximum penalties are. So it's not like the Kennedy case at all. Kennedy was a one-time deal. This is a pattern or course of conduct on the part of the prosecutor. And to maintain the appearance and the integrity of justice in this system, both sides need to have the same opportunities. And when the government messes up like this, and the government and the court doesn't do its Rule 11 obligations, knowing the penalties, advising the defendant properly to make an intelligent plea, there has to be some type of more than, gee, you get a third shot. We're asking for dismissal and release. That's what he wants.
You could ask the district court. You could ask the district court to impose any penalty you think is appropriate also.
I'm sorry?
You could ask the district court. If you think there's something funny happened in the district court, you could ask the district court judge to address that.
Correct. And that's why we need a new district judge, because this judge ain't going to do it.
Well.
And if you look at the criteria in Solomon, the criteria for reassignment is extraordinary under extraordinary facts. This is extraordinary facts. This doesn't happen often, thank goodness. But when it does, there needs to be a reassignment so we get a clean slate so this guy can get sentenced appropriately.
Certainly an interesting case. So
it is.
We'll review it. Thank you for your arguments.
Thank you.
I think that's all. We may adjourn court.